Now, don't bill anybody for two drives down. It was long enough, I'm sure.
We're splitting.
As it
yes.
was. I also came from the north, so.
It was rough today.
It was bad.
Yeah.
4 minutes again?
Yes, please. All right. Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Josh Trumbull. I represent Mr. Nielsen. He's in the courtroom with me today. This case is about what happens when homeowners going through a very difficult time and they're having trouble making their payments and they attempt to try to figure out who they should be speaking to work things out. And they receive multiple notices and things like that that are required under the Deeds of Trust Act. Specifically, 6124-0308 requires the disclosure of the owner of the loan as well as the servicer. Recently, the Supreme Court noted that in Brown, if the trustee has an undisputed declaration declaring that an entity is an actual holder, then that is good enough to go forward. The reason why Mr. Nielsen believes that he has a valid claim in under the CPA in his case is because he followed the notices and he followed up with them. He wrote letters to the different parties. He kept on receiving different answers. At first, he was told that NationStar owned it. Then he was told that Deutsche Bank owned it. Then I believe he was told a trust owned it. And then finally, he received a letter from Ocwen that said that his note had been purged from the trust.
It said there was a purged account. How do we know what a purged account means?
I don't think at this point it's clear what a purged account means. Mr. Nielsen believed that it meant his note had been purged from the trust. And under summary judgment, the evidence should be viewed in light most favor of the plaintiff. So I think if you view it in light of Mr. Nielsen attempting to figure out what's going on, he's being told multiple entities are the owner, and then it comes back and they say, well, your account, you know, he viewed that as the note, has been purged from the trust. So he was essentially blind, and he was telling all the he was telling Quality and NationStar about this, and they essentially decided that they were going to proceed to sale.
Why doesn't the December 11th, 2013 letter from NationStar responding to Mr. Nielsen's December 6th letter kind of calm those seas, even if there were some bumps along the way? At that point, NationStar is saying, hey, we're servicing this. We deal with these issues. If you've got any communication you want to make, we're the people you talk to. Why doesn't that?
Sure. Yeah, and arguably under Brown, that could meet because if they're going to declare they're the actual holder, then that could work. But if you look at the history of the statute and recent case law, it becomes clear that you are entitled to know who the owner is. And some of the analysis that this court has done in Trujillo and then the Supreme Court has done in the review of Trujillo and Brown points out that there are disparate interests oftentimes between the owner and the note servicer or maybe the holder. And so Mr. Nielsen believes that maybe the servicer might have a different perspective on how to work things out than the owner. And I believe that the legislature has that perspective as well, and that's why the borrower is entitled to know who the owner is and who the servicer is.
Isn't here we don't have any deficiency in the beneficiary designation that was provided, correct?
Correct.
Trujillo.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I pointed to the language in Brown where it's, you know, the uncontroverted or the unchallenged declaration. In this case, we believe that Mr. Nielsen challenged it. He wrote letters and he provided Quality and saying, hey, look, I'm confused. These statutes are for my protection. And so Quality needed to conduct the investigation that's described. I believe it was in Walker, the cursory investigation when they're appointed. And then even if they meet that burden, once the borrower contacts them and says, hey, I realize that you're being told this, but I'm being told this other information, as a neutral judicial substitute under Clem, which is required to comply with the statute and the Constitution and equity, the trustee needs to act like an independent judicial substitute and listen to the borrower's concerns and maybe even say, hey, maybe this isn't a file that we can non-judicially foreclose on. Maybe it needs to go through the judicial process where rules of evidence and things like that can happen. That is an option for trustees. Just usually they don't go that route. So, and then this is another case where there's an evidentiary issue. There's a declaration submitted by NationStar that didn't include any business records. It was summarizing.
Well, the note and deed of trust for business records.
Sure. Yeah. I believe it's Bavon v. In footnote 4 of Trujillo from the Supreme Court, though, it actually says having a copy of the note does not make you the note holder. That's all that we see. We see a copy, and we see somebody summarizing business records, and the business records weren't submitted. So that declaration is hearsay. So all that's in front of the court is a copy.
How about the ER-1006 argument that, well, if they're business records, they're voluminous. And, of course, we have this mindset of physical boxes of documents, mm-hmm. and the reality is they're magnetic storage units places. But why can't someone say, here's the voluminous record of all the payment history, what the balance is owing, and here I'm giving you a summary in the form of the balance owing is X dollars. I'm familiar with the systems we
sure.
use. That's the balance. Why isn't that good enough?
Because it deprives Mr. Nielsen of due process. He doesn't get an opportunity to be heard because they have all of the evidence. He's not able to look at that and see. They can say specifically, you know, we have a custodian and they're our agent. And then you look at the custodian agreement and it specifically says you are not our agent. And I personally had that happen in 3 cases in the last year.
So see you again in 10 minutes.
Yep.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Andrew Yates. I'm here for respondents NationStar and Deutsche Bank. I will tap out after about 7 minutes and give the rest of my time to the co-respondents. This is one of many cases brought to stop a non-judicial foreclosure. The record indicates, although it's not clear, that this doesn't appear to be the property that the Nielsens are residing in. It appears to be some kind of an investment property. The Nielsens have abandoned most of the claims that they initially brought to declare the Deed of Trust Act unconstitutional, to declare that no party has the authority to enforce and foreclose the Deed of Trust. And they're focused now on the one non-abandoned claim, which is for a violation of the Washington Consumer Protection Act.
Is the declaration adequate? I mean, is there a problem with business records, a person saying, hey, I've read a bunch of records, and here's they say these words. Why isn't that hearsay?
Also, let me go to that point, Your Honor. And I'd like to do it in reference to this court's recent decision in Podbelancic, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. In that case, the business records at issue were a specific step bid document and apparently a sworn declaration, but that were not actually in the record that somebody else was testifying about. Here, as the court has noted, the central business records, the note and deed of trust, are in the record, and they are self-authenticating documents under the evidence rules.
How about the argument that a copy of the note isn't good enough?
The note's sitting in a safe in our office, Your Honor, and was available for inspection. I don't think that it applies here.
Did you bring the blue ink note to the summary judgment hearing?
You know, honestly, I don't want to misstate it. I may have, but we've had it in our firm's safe and available for inspection. I believe that I did, but I don't want to affirmatively represent that given the passage of time. More to the point, Podbelancic involved those two direct hard copy documents. What we're talking about here are computer records, and under Rule 1006, in the case law, such as Discover Bank and State v. Kane, those records are summarized, I think, and can be admissible.
The proffer, the declaration didn't seem to be a proffer under ER-1006, though.
Well, it is not expressly so. It is a summary of really just basic custodial information and account information alone, which I'll add are buttressed by the business records that the Nielsens put into the record, such as the servicing transfer letter from NationStar in July of 2012 that says, welcome to NationStar, essentially, we are now servicing your loan. There's a lot of business records of that nature that the Nielsens have put into the record. But the point, in State v. Kane, it says this. If the underlying records could have been admitted, and I quote, it is not error to admit either a compilation of such records or testimony concerning such records. And that's it. 23 WinApp 110. And the situations here is just vastly different and distinguishable from the cases that don't allow somebody to talk about what a business record says or means, which Mr. Nielsen tries to do in his whole central theory of the case regarding this Aucoin letter. If these records are inadmissible, certainly the Aucoin materials are inadmissible. And
what's the significance of the Aucoin letter? Does it raise a question of fact?
It does not. And your question, Your Honor, anticipated the exact point that I wanted to make based on what the record actually says, and that's simply that an account has been purged. I don't think that it's been sufficiently connected to this loan. Certainly, there's some indication that there's, you know, it relates to the same property. There's servicing by the same prior servicer. However, it just simply does not impact it because there is no connection to the Nielsen's actual claim. What purge account means is totally unclear. The conclusion that Mr. Nielsen tries to draw is based entirely on his own self-serving legal conclusions in his declaration and some records that I could not make out a word of or understand what they were.
One broad view of his position is, I'm getting stuff left, right, and central that's all over the map, and this person's the owner, that person's the owner, and you're the beneficiary, and I'm the beneficiary, and Aucoin says something about a purge. How am I supposed to know what to do? Is that a basis for a CPA claim?
Well, I think it depends on the record and the facts, and here it clearly isn't. And I think, you know, we really do have to look at what's actually in the record. As Your Honor noted, there is a December 11, 2013 letter from NationStar that very clearly spells out that it's the servicer. Deutsche Bank is the ultimate owner. After the litigation is filed, obtains some kind of a letter from some entity, and it talks strictly about the Chapter 11 ResCap bankruptcy with GMAC Mortgage. He has not done the spade work to connect it to this case and the elements of this claim that he has. So I don't think it makes a difference. I also want to point out what's absent from some other things that are absent from the record that matter. And that is, you know, you look at Mr. Nielsen's declaration. There's absolutely nothing in there about him ever demanding Foreclosure Fairness Act mediation, applying for a loan modification, in any meaningful way taking steps to actually try to resolve anything with respect to this loan. And those are essential elements of the claim under indoor billboard. If you're relying on an alleged affirmative misrepresentation for a Consumer Protection Act claim, you have to show a causal link, and he has not done so. He has not shown a unfair deceptive act of practice because the briefing in this case closed after Brown issued, and NationStar has established its holder status. And that's another point I want to make about the letter is, even if you assume everything in there is true and correct, it does not change what matters under Brown, and that is that NationStar is the holder of the note and that Mr. Nielsen owes an obligation to pay on that note. Those are the issues that matter for his claim in this case. And even if that letter were true and he had connected the dots, which he has not, it wouldn't matter because the undisputed evidence that does matter establishes NationStar's holder and beneficiary status, and in no way would he be relieved from his obligation to pay on the note.
You're down to about 2 minutes.
Your counsel is coveting your...
All right. With that, unless the court has further questions, I will tap out and let my co-counsel present an argument.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Kathy Shakibi, and I represent Respondents Quality Loan Service of Washington and McCarthy & Holtus, LLP. I would like to start by saying that in this case, the foreclosure sale has not completed. The borrower still owns the property. To the extent that foreclosure steps have progressed, every step has been compliant with the Deed of Trust Act.
Let me ask you a question I've got about, did the trustee, was there a duty to investigate that was triggered when you had this history of some misstatements along the way?
Yes, Your Honor. The trustee did review every concern that the borrower raised, and it determined that the sale was proceeding correctly. NationStar was the holder of the note and under the Deed of Trust Act beneficiary of the note. It has been confirmed by the Supreme Court in Brown, a holder of the note is the person entitled to enforce it, entitled to modify it, entitled to receive the obligations of the note, and entitled to discharge the note.
Was there any communication back to Mr. Nielsen summarizing the results of the investigation?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Nielsen's, there are two letters that are on record of communications from Mr. Nielsen. The first one was the letter of November 2nd, 2013. That letter has been responded to, and Mr. Nielsen received our position, received the trustee. The trustee conducted an investigation. It determined that the foreclosure is proceeding in the name of the correct entity. Then Mr. Nielsen sent a second letter which took the legal position that the owner is the beneficiary. And the trustee disagreed with that position because under the Deed of Trust Act, the beneficiary is the holder. And that was later confirmed by the Supreme Court in Brown. So just because the trustee disagreed with the legal position borrower took, that does not mean there's been a breach of duty.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. Counsel raised a couple points that I'd like to address. The first one relates to the Ocwen letter. Ocwen states it's the master servicer, and NationStar is stating it's just the servicer. So you have to remember that Mr. Nielsen is just a normal person. He doesn't understand all this stuff. That's pretty unfair and confusing. It seems to me that the respondents are arguing that the Ocwen letter shouldn't be admitted into evidence because it's hearsay. However, they didn't object at the trial court in their briefing or during oral argument, so that argument is waived. Unlike Nations...
Was the purpose of the Ocwen letter, even for the truth of what it asserts, was it to prove that what was said in the letter was true, or just was it offered to prove that this guy's been told two different things and they both can't be true?
I believe it was offered for both, Your Honor.
Well, one would be a hearsay.
Yes.
The other wouldn't be hearsay at all.
The other one is just using it to show that he's getting told multiple things and they're
confusing.
He's
told multiple things. We know they can't all be true.
Exactly.
But the relevant aspect is he's being told multiple things.
Yes. Yes. And that's essentially the problem here. Mr. Nielsen, he isn't trying to get a free house. He's just like a normal person. Things get hard. There's statutes for your protection so that you can avoid foreclosure. And what happens is he gets multiple notices from multiple different parties, and they're all saying different things, and essentially no one will listen to him. As far as the argument that the declaration submitted in support of NationStar and Deutsche Bank's motion for summary judgment, that the records were too voluminous, I don't know how there's any evidence of that. No one's ever seen these records. It seems to me that if they're in a computer, they can hit print. You can supply them on a disk. If they were large records and they said what they said, they could have turned them over and I would have looked at them and we would have stipulated that's what they said.
There really wasn't an objection in the trial court, though, either, that ER 1006 was not complied with.
We objected a significant portion of our brief and oral argument that they had not complied, that it was hearsay, and that they had not attached the business records. And I don't believe that they responded by saying, 1006 covers. I'd have to double check that. But we did, Mr. Nielsen brought it up vehemently and devoted significant briefing to the issue that business records need to be attached. So another issue that respondents brought up is they kind of act like Mr. Nielsen didn't do enough to be able to come to court and be heard. He didn't try to get a loan modification. He didn't go to mediation. And in light most favorable to Mr. Nielsen, that's probably because he was confused and he didn't know who he should be talking to at this point. NationStar was the servicer. Ocwen was the master servicer. NationStar was the owner. Deutsche Bank was the owner. A trust was the owner. Then it had been purged. So,
well, that's just the nature of what he's complaining about. I don't know who to mediate with.
Exactly.
I don't know who could modify my loan.
Yes.
Because I've gotten different answers from different people.
Yes.
So this is just another manifestation of my confusion.
Exactly.
Not a refutation of it.
Correct. Yeah. It's a 20-day deadline from your notice of sale. He's confused. I think public impact is shown under 1986-093 3. And Mr. Nielsen testified in the summary judgment declaration that he has incurred injury that meets the CPA. Specifically, there's the receipts for his mailing. There's the time and distraction taken away from personal business, and he is a small business owner, and it took away from his capacity to make money. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Court is in recess.
Good job.
You too.
Yeah. Thank you very much.